From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The tiny Arkansas town of Bradford sent its mayor, its police chief, and eight other National Guardsmen to Iraq. Its high school librarian was called up by the Air Force Reserve. Nearly a dozen men in all went, a big bite out of a small town. A year and a half later, the men came home. Now they're reflecting on how war changed them and their town. Tonight on Point, the imprint of the war in Iraq on one small town in Arkansas. But first, we begin tonight in Washington with new poll numbers on American public opinion on the war and more from the Washington Post. For the first time since the war in Iraq began, the Post poll found most Americans now do not believe the war in Iraq has made the United States safer. Joining me from Washington is Claudia Dean, Assistant Polling Director for the Washington Post. Claudia, what do those numbers look like on American attitudes toward the war?
Well, what we've been finding overall is just a general across-the-board sagging in support for the war in Iraq, so that now we have a majority of Americans saying, really, when I look at it on balance, it was not worth the cost. That's been going on for about a year now. The number that just changed, or sort of the tipping point we feel like we might have just reached, is on this question about whether the war has made us more secure here at home. And that is, of course, the vital rationale in terms of the administration.
Right.
And what we find now is that 52% of the country say, no, it's not making us safer. And that's the first time we've seen that number go over 50%.
The focus in Washington has moved on to Social Security, lots of domestic matters, but you found in the poll that Americans are still very concerned about Iraq. It ranks right up there among their top issues.
It's second only to the economy. The economy has been in the forefront for a while, but it's the number two issue, and even terrorism now is behind it, as are all the domestic issues. One thing that's interesting is the people who are keeping this issue on the top of the agenda are opponents of the war. When you look at folks who say this is the most important problem, they're almost overwhelmingly against the war.
So the party line attitudes toward the war that we've seen from very early on are still there.
Extremely strong patterns in that sense. We've got three in four Republicans saying the war was worth it, and even more Democrats saying it wasn't. And what's happened is that independents over time have sort of tilted more to the negative view of the conflict, and that's what's tilted the numbers.
But some of these numbers are so overwhelming that they clearly go across party lines. For example, American attitudes on casualties in Iraq. What did you find there?
Absolutely. We're finding huge majorities of people thinking that, you know, given sort of what we expected, we've experienced too many casualties on the order of more than 7 in 10. And that number, at first people were willing to support the casualties, but by about 3 months into the conflict, you already saw the majority saying it's too much. And of course, when you're a student of public opinion, you know, casualty numbers are something you definitely look at, because as we saw in Vietnam and Korea, that was one factor that influenced the sagging support.
What about the overall job that the Bush administration is doing generally, and on terrorism in particular? How's it being assessed in your poll?
Well, Bush is right there at about 48-52, plus or minus, on his job approval. That was a new high on his disapproval. His numbers have...
That is 52% disapproval, 48% approval. Have I got that right?
Yes.
Okay.
And on terrorism, that's been his strong suit all the way through his first term, and even at the beginning of this term. That was usually the one area of his job that the majority of Americans said gave him the thumbs up. And that number has gone down to sort of an even 50-50 now. And that's tying for his lowest record in that area ever, and certainly bound to be causing some consternation in the White House.
It's interesting that while the war in Iraq has stayed very high on people's priority list, terrorism itself, kind of in the abstract, has not, by your poll.
No, terrorism is fading a little bit as an issue, and, you know, like you pointed out, Bush is getting lower marks on that. Some people speculate that's because he's not talking about it as much or reminding people, but when we were doing callbacks, a lot of people mentioned Osama bin Laden, and that's certainly one touchstone achievement that has not yet been realized.
But the key number that no doubt they'll be watching in Washington this week is that percentage, now 52%, who don't think the war has made the United States safer. There's some kind of rumble in those numbers, I guess.
There is, because when you go back through again, sort of all the historical literature on watching American public opinion, how it relates to war, one thing people are always looking at is, does the public think some sort of vital American interest is at stake? And That's the vital American interest we're talking about now here. We've ruled out weapons of mass destruction. We're talking about, are we safer from terrorism? Was this good for us over the long term? And so, you know, there's no telling whether this number can bobble back once some sort of terrorist incident or scare comes onto the horizon. But for right now, it's tilting negative.
Claudia, thanks very much for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Tom.
Claudia Dean, Assistant Polling Director for The Washington Post. She spoke with me from Washington. The town of Bradford, Arkansas, sits an hour's drive north of Little Rock, population 819. A year and a half ago, Bradford sent its mayor, its police chief, and eight other guardsmen to Iraq. Their high school librarian was called up by the Air Force Reserve. Women stepped up to fill the void in City Hall and the high school. Wives juggled their jobs, their husbands' jobs, and their families. When the men came home, the town had subtly changed, and so had they. The business that the mayor left behind had faltered in his absence. Big plans for fixing the town's water system went untouched, and the men returned a little jittery, a little more jaded, with bloody photographs and memories of war. Tonight on Point, the war in Iraq and life in one small American town. You can join the conversation. Are you one of the 226,000 weekend warriors who, like the men of Bradford, have been shipped out since 9/11? Were you one of those who helped your town, your community, your family carry on when the soldiers went away? How's it gone? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Dallas, Texas, is Kathy Booth Thomas, Dallas Bureau Chief for Time Magazine. She profiled the town of Bradford and members of the 39th Infantry Brigade in last week's issue of the magazine. Kathy Booth Thomas, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
How did Little Bradford come up on your screen, Almighty Time magazine correspondent?
Well, actually, it had been written about by other press because they were in the Associated Press and everybody. Washington Post had written about them when they went off to war. And then it just kind of faded from the news. And we thought it might be interesting to find out, you know, what happens after the headlines. You know, what happens when the guys come home? Are they the same kind of people as when they left?
And it was written about because so many went from a town that was so small.
Yes, yeah. I mean, 819 people and a dozen, you know, left. And from, you know, if you add some people who live right outside the city limits, even more. But it was more striking because it was the mayor, the police chief, the high school librarian, the grade school librarian. And then, you know, it just began multiplying. The town's business just basically, you know, people were worried about making decisions when the guys were gone. You know, these were the two guys, basically, you know, City Hall is run by 10 people, and no one really wanted to make a decision with them gone.
And as you describe it, it's not as though the town fell apart, but things really kind of slowed to almost a halt in certain respects while the men were
right,
gone.
Right, you know. Yeah, the Y's, for instance, I mean, they banded together and they raised money for a mural that honored all the war heroes of their town, which they thought would kind of add up to maybe 25 people. But when they started doing the list, there were more than 400 people from their small town who've served in all the wars, you know, since going back to the Korean War. So the wives, you know, the town didn't fall apart. It's not as if, you know, mm-hmm. nobody did anything. But it's, you know, people's lives kind of went on hold because everybody knew somebody in that town that was in the war, you know, or they were related to them. So the kids at the school, you know, actually knew people who were going away. The mayor gave his camo jacket, which, of course, he didn't need, his green camo jacket, to one of the school kids just to say, keep this for me. I'm going to come back. I'm going to get it. You know, that's what kind of everybody just hung when they, you know, there were 6 months of training, and then they went off for a year in Baghdad. And everyone just basically hung on, you know, well, what'd you hear? What's the email? What did he say on the phone? There was just a lot of everybody kind of holding their breath for these guys to come home in one piece.
We're going to hear in a few minutes from the police chief in Bradford, Arkansas. Josh Chambliss will be with us tonight. We've got an interesting situation tonight. The mayor of this American town was scheduled to be with us, of course, Paul Bunn. He has been ordered today to stop talking to the press about the kinds of things he's been talking to the press about. And I guess that's partly because of what was reported in your magazine and all that came after, Kathy, a kind of gag order from the Arkansas National Guard. Fascinating.
Well, I think he admits he made some inappropriate remarks at the dedication of this mural to soldiers about the commander in chief. And you have to understand, I mean, these people opened their lives. They were really honest and open. They told me, you know, look, I'm on Paxil, I'm on Prozac to help me get over, you know, post-traumatic stress. And as the mayor told me, he said I was, you know, on this super drug for it, and I kind of, you know, my inner censor went to sleep, and I said a few things maybe I shouldn't have.
Well, but you know, maybe that he shouldn't have, but maybe that he really felt it. It's a funny thing when the mayor of a town in America can't speak his mind because he's in the National Guard.
Right. Well, and in fact, I don't think they're as upset about the things he said about the war. I mean, that's a legitimate complaint. What he has a town that they had to borrow, you know, $775,000 for a water system that was, you know, half a century old. And the police department had $800 in his kitty. You know, he'll tell you himself he had no money when he came back from the war. And I think these guys just felt frustrated. They went over there so gung-ho. They saw all the money being poured into the war and how futile it was, because as the mayor told me, you know, we put that money in there and then they blow it up the next day. So, and then he comes home, he has no money for his town, he feels like the infrastructure's falling apart, and he's frustrated, yeah.
We're going to turn in a moment to voices from Bradford, Arkansas. Kathy Booth Thomas with Time Magazine is with us. You can join us as well. We're talking tonight about the imprint of the Iraq War on one small town in Arkansas, the men who went, the town they left behind, and the reality they've all come home to. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Has the Iraq War come home to your town, your family, your life? And how's the war looking from the home front these days? How's your returning veteran doing? We're at 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the imprint of the Iraq War on one small town in Arkansas, Bradford, Arkansas, talking about the men who went to war, the town they left behind, and the reality they have all come home to. Bradford is an hour north of Little Rock, population 819. It sent nearly a dozen men to Iraq for the better part of a year and a half. That's a big bite out of a small town. We're joined tonight by Kathy Booth Thomas. She joins us from Dallas. She's Dallas Bureau Chief for Time Magazine. She profiled Bradford, Arkansas in a recent article in Time. We're also joined right now from Bradford by Chief Josh Chambliss. He's police chief at the town of Bradford, 30-year-old staff sergeant in the 39th Infantry Brigade of the Arkansas National Guard. He was posted primarily in Baghdad from April 2004 to March 2005. Chief Chambliss, we're delighted to have you with us tonight. Thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
So here you are. You guys took a big part of the population of the town away. You came back home, and now you're in the national media spotlight. How's it feel?
Well, it's been crazy the last few days, but, you know, we're handling it all right.
And you're home with your family. I'm trying to remember. Was your daughter born while you were gone or after you got back?
Well, she was born during my tour in Iraq, but they let me come home for 2 weeks to see the birth.
To your wife, Farah, and your daughter, Chloe.
Yeah.
How's the family? How did everybody do while you were gone?
Well, it was rough on my wife, having a full-time job and a new mother and trying to take care of a house. And, you know, it was really hard on her, but she, you know, she was a strong person. She's made it through it all right.
Kathy, join us here. You talked with Josh Chambliss, the chief of police, and his family in their home in Bradford. What's your sense of how it was?
Well, you know, definitely, I think they're two pretty strong people. I was amazed. I expected a little, you know, more of the tears and drama because I saw her before he came home. And but as I write in the story, the thing that struck me was, right away, they were my first interview, mm-hmm. and he was showing me pictures on his computer of life in Baghdad, and he was showing me, you know, the palace of Saddam Hussein's son, Uday, and his famous rape bed, and, you know, some of the casualties. He showed me a picture of a heart that was lying in the street. A human heart that had been ripped. And then at the same time he was talking to me about that, his little daughter was crying, and he turned to her and just said really gently, "Hey, Toots." Mm-hmm. And I, you know, just that just brought mm-hmm. home to me kind of the the weirdness of all that these guys must be going through, having handled that and then coming back to quote-unquote normal life.
Chief Chambliss, right, how about it? What's it like to stretch from those scenes of real bloody horror in Iraq back into your own living room, the bosom of your own family?
Well, it was hard, and, you know, we still fight with it today. And, you know, of course, I've been going to the doctor the last couple of weeks and having some checkups. But, you know, it is stressful, and it's something that you can never really be prepared for.
And to come back with it, I don't know what your checkups are for. Kathy was writing here about it seemed half the people she talked to were on Paxil, whether they'd been in an antidepressant, whether they'd been in Iraq or been waiting back home. Some people are needing that kind of help, are they not, Chief Chambliss, to kind of keep it together?
And it is. And right now, when the Arkansas National Guard came back, I don't really think the Veterans Hospital was prepared for the amount of people that was going to be coming in. And I received a letter from last week stating, hey, don't call us, we'll call you. And, you know, and it could be up to 6 months to a year before I am actually able to get in and see a doctor.
And this is not for a lost limb. This is for unsettled nerves, really.
Oh, yeah, you know, and, you know, everybody is going to have some sort of post-traumatic stress disorder when coming out mm-hmm. of a year in Baghdad. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's going to happen. And so for some people, it's going to be worse, and for others, you know, it's just how you handle it.
Describe the kind of duty that you did there, Josh Chambliss, in Baghdad.
Well, I was an infantry section leader, and we basically run patrols in town, conducted raids, pulled convoy security, cleared highways up and down through Baghdad to make sure that there was no roadside bombs. So,
making this sound easy, but, you know, these are the hardest jobs there are in Baghdad.
This is where the bombs go off. This is where Iraqis die and Americans die. The electronic album on your computer that Kathy spoke about seems to have plenty of that. Blown up bodies, severed head, that heart blasted right out of an Iraqi's chest. That's rough stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I hate to say it, but you kind of get accustomed to it over a year, as bad as it sounds. But, I mean, when you're seeing it and you're expecting to see it, you can only, you know, just suck it up and deal with it.
You told Kathy that in your first 6 months you went from being scared to excited, like, hey, this is kind of fun. But finally, you said, it was sheer hatred of the Iraqi people you were feeling. And people would say that's racist, but it's not. You said it was a culture clash. We didn't understand each other. What did that boil down to? Help us understand that, Josh Chambliss.
Well, I was always taught to believe when somebody's helping you, you don't bite the hand that feeds you. Beggars can't be choosers. And we went in with the attitude that, hey, you know, we're here to help you. Let's get this place straightened up. And, you know, we would do so much for these people, and we're giving them a whole new way of life. And it was like, yeah, I'm taking it, but on the other hand, you know, I really don't care. And they don't appreciate it. And after a while, you just, you know, you start thinking to yourself, you know, why am I here and why am I trying to help these people?
A kind of bitterness there. And when you came home, you report that you had to come face-to-face with the restraints on life in Bradford. After seeing all the material and money poured into Iraq, you came back home to patrol cars with 35-year-old radar, with $800 for new equipment. That was a rough thing to look at, as you describe it.
And it is, and when you know when you're trying to juggle your police officers, a city council, mayor, the citizens, and other agencies that you work with, and you have $800 to work with, it you know, it is frustrating. And, you know, you have the citizens who deserve the best police protection that can be afforded to them and the best investigative skills. And then you have a council who is wanting big city results, you know, and mm-hmm. for $800, it just ain't going to happen.
And $800 in Iraq, probably gone in the blink of an eye.
Oh, yeah, that's probably, you know, probably just trying to get somebody in there with some hammers and some nails to fix something.
right. Kathy Booth
Thomas,
yes, please.
Hey, Tom, I would point out something that, you know, I went with the preconception that, you know, Arkansas, hello, Clinton, Democrat. But, mm-hmm. you know, these guys are all staunch Republicans. Mm-hmm. So don't be fooled. They're not, you know, these are not anti-war guys who, you know, they went, they've served their country, they're, you know, He's a good Republican, you know, he'll tell you that himself. You know, they just came home with their eyes open.
No, I'm kind of assuming that here, and yet in Mayor Bunn's case, there was a kind of an evolution of outlook. He tells us, has been restricted from being here to talk about that tonight. So we're going to have to lean on you and Josh Chambliss a little bit on that front, Kathy. Take us through Mayor Bunn's experience. He was a little older, 37, had an insulation business in Little Rock, an infantryman. He'd been in Panama, the first Gulf War. But as you described it, he said the job in Baghdad was the worst by far he'd been involved in.
Yeah, well, he went through, he was part of the Quick Reaction Force, which I guess Josh was also part of, and they deployed for like four-day stretches to hunt insurgents. And they, in their entire time in Iraq, they got hit by 37 IEDs, which everybody now knows is an improvised explosive device.
And one day in Sadr City, 13 of those explosives.
13, right. He still has nightmares about this. And there was a day in April last year when they had a rocket attack inside the camp. And he spent 2 hours picking up pieces of bodies of American soldiers. And you can understand why he's a little agitated. He worked at the end of his tour of duty. He worked with Iraqi translators, 56 of them, trying to build projects in Iraq. And that's what he can't really talk about, with the work they did. But he became very upset because the Iraqi translators were not allowed to dine and mix with American soldiers in the facility.
And they were dying for their work. They were being picked off by insurgents.
Right. He had four taken and executed by insurgents, one on his last day in Iraq. So, you know, this is why, you know, he just was burned out totally by the experience.
You describe him coming home on Paxil and dealing with a post-traumatic stress disorder, really sensitive to loud noises, turned off even the seatbelt warning in his car because it would drive him crazy.
Right. And yet here's a guy who's tremendously successful. I mean, remember, these guys were all weekend soldiers. He had a insulation business that was doing, you know, $500,000. Oh no, sorry, it was doing $300,000 a year. You know, he was a go-getter businessman. He grew up one of 14 kids in Searcy, Arkansas. He made himself, you know, into a big, you know, business, and he ended up for a year and a half having to give up his business. And now he's like $500,000 in the hole and thinks he's going to have to file for bankruptcy.
Because his wife tried to hold that business together while he was gone, and that was hard to do. Before he left, he gave a speech about, a kind of enthusiastic speech, as you reported, about citizen soldiers heading off to help in nation building. When he came back, we really want to understand this thing that kind of hit the fan and continues to, I guess. He gave a speech. Well, describe the setting for us. This is where they were dedicating a memorial. And
they were dedicating this wall that they had painted to honor the soldiers of all the wars from Bradford. And he gave a speech on kind of the horrors of war, you know, to warn the young men that it's not, you know, as one lady in town put it to me, a joyride in Humvees. Mm. And in it, he said, you know, this is what got him in trouble. He said, let's trust the president about as far as we can throw him.
And that trust was around what? Around the mission of the war? About how the United States is spending its resources? What was he bitter about?
He's bitter about, you know, his bitterness is over the expenditures there, and that he comes home to an infrastructure that he feels is falling apart, that we're putting money in a place where nobody really cares. And it's you know, he went from somebody who was gung-ho about, you know, nation building to somebody who felt that nation building was not working and that the money would be better spent here at home.
Now,
in
fairness,
that's his political
view
viewpoint.
Coming home. Now, the mayor was very willing to talk with us tonight, but he was told he could not. He did say, he told you as well, he said, I probably said some things I shouldn't have. But as he described it, he said, there was no more hardcore Republican than me until I went to Iraq. I'm against abortion and gay rights and don't mess with my guns, but I've grown up a lot, he told you, Kathy. When you've spent a year in hell and you have seen the waste of money, I've seen, well, the bottom line, he says, I'm neither party now.
Right.
And that's what the mayor told you, what he was prepared to tell us tonight. But that was put right off limits. We asked the Arkansas National Guard to join us to explain why the mayor is not with us tonight. Captain Christine Munn is joining us from Little Rock, Arkansas. She's State Public Affairs Officer for the Arkansas National Guard. Captain Munn, thanks a lot for joining us.
My pleasure.
So we wanted to talk with the mayor of Bradford, Arkansas. He told us that he's not able to do that, though he had planned to and wanted to. Why not?
Well, let me say, first of all, that every military member takes an oath when they join the military to support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
Do you think speaking to us would offend that oath?
Well, no, let me finish, please.
Mm-hmm.
And with that comes certain responsibilities and very strict guidance and regulations that we all have to follow. I will say that the mayor was not restricted from talking. I spoke with the brigade's deputy commander and his battalion commander today, and no one is aware of anyone giving him an order not to speak tonight. What we did was remind him that he does have military guidelines that he needs to follow, and so perhaps he felt that he just shouldn't go on in his best interest for his career in the military. But I will say he was not threatened, and he was not directed not to speak with you all tonight.
Well, that's, I guess, a matter of interpretation, because he told us he's now going to talk to his lawyer. He was worried about saying anything at all and did not feel free to speak to us. So you know how these things come down. I suppose it can be said one way and interpreted another way, or there can be a spin on it. Does it seem odd to you, though, Captain Munn, that this National Guardsman from Arkansas, who is mayor of his town, who is political by his position in his community, is being told he can't speak up when he comes home to that community?
Well, I think the point that was made earlier where he said he thought maybe he said some things he shouldn't have said is very important to remember, because when he spoke about the president is his commander-in-chief, and there are very specific guidelines on what we can and can't say politically, and that's just the responsibility of being a person in the military, and that's, you know, when you raise your hand and you give that oath, that's just one of the things you sign up for. So, of course, I can't speak for him personally, but I can tell you that he was not ordered, and in fact, he spoke with our military lawyers, who advised him, again, just what the guidance and the regulations do say. Again, nobody said anything even related to giving him an order not to speak to the media.
We talked with a law professor at West Point this afternoon who said, yes, there is this regulation that active duty personnel. And by the way, is he active duty now that he's back in Bradford?
Well, right now he is still on active duty orders.
Okay, but they can't make political statements, but this West Point law professor said that regulation is by no means always strictly enforced. There's a lot of latitude there. The mayor of this little town feels like it came down on him. We were looking last month, not long before he died, David Hackworth, very highly decorated Army veteran of Vietnam, and later a critic of the Pentagon in many respects, said that the brass have reverted to the weapon they've used to silence warriors since long before Caesar and running Rome, intimidation. He pointed out that you now have, you've got soldiers, American soldiers, facing disciplinary action for disloyalty and insubordination, ending up with more than 20 years in the slammer if found guilty, for emailing things home, for talking. Is the situation that fragile, Captain Munn, that American soldiers can't speak their mind?
Well, the regulations are in black and white, and as far as being enforced, they should be enforced to the fullest extent. And there's very good reasons for those regulations. To have people in the military ranks revert to disobeying orders and not supporting the oath that they chose to defend, you know, causes a great deal of problem when you have soldiers fighting in combat.
Josh Chambliss, let me put it to you. You served in Iraq with Paul Bunn. How do you feel like him about him being feeling gagged tonight?
Well, first of all, no matter what situation we find ourselves in, we should always support the president, regardless if we agree with the job that he is doing. He is our president. We should defend him and support him. Now, far as the decisions that he makes, I believe that as citizens who have the rights to vote, and especially when you have, you know, been in combat and defended your country,
mm-hmm.
that you should have the right to, you know, maybe not criticize, but yet, you know, bring out to light and question some things that are being done.
I mean, it would seem to me that you and Paul Bunn have experience that's valuable for the country to hear.
Well, I mean, I love my country, and I voted for my president, and if he was to run again, I would more than likely vote for him again.
Mm.
But on the other hand, we have to hold our leaders responsible. I'm a leader of my community,
mm-hmm.
and I expect to be held responsible by my citizens. And my integrity is worth more to me than my job will ever be. And when we cannot start holding our leaders responsible, then, you know, we need to take a step back and look at this.
How do you think Mayor Bunn's feeling about it tonight, your friend Paul?
Well, I talked to him, and he just felt like it's probably best that, you know, he just didn't talk, you know, just to save problems, not so much that he has being held back, but, you know, just to kind of keep trouble down and just to, you know, kind of let things die down.
Yep, we hear that loud and clear. Josh Chambliss, Kathy Booth Thomas, please stick with us. Captain Christine Munn of the Arkansas National Guard, thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
We're talking tonight about the imprint of the Iraq War on one small town in Arkansas. You can join the conversation. How does it feel to see billions spent in Iraq every month while needs pile up at home? Right and necessary or something else? We're at 1-800-423-8255. What do you hear in the voices from one small town in Arkansas? 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the imprint of the Iraq War on one small town in Arkansas, the men who went, the town they left behind, and the reality they've all come home to. We're talking to voices tonight from Bradford, Arkansas. Population 819, nearly a dozen men went to war. They've come home. They've changed a bit. So has the town. We're joined tonight by the chief of police from Bradford, Arkansas. Josh Chambliss, Kathy Booth Thomas with Time Magazine is with us as well. She profiled the town in the magazine's edition last week. Right now, Dan is calling from Spokane, Washington. Hi, Dan. You're on the air.
Good evening, Tom. I just wanted to say to Mayor Bunn, I understand he can't speak tonight, but mm-hmm. I figure he might be listening.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to say there's one person, at least in Spokane, Washington, who is disgusted by the business-as-usual attitude that the Army has about this, of course. And I feel like if you can't criticize the general and even the general's boss, then, you know, there's something wrong in America.
But, Dan, you heard the Arkansas National Guard representative there, Captain Munn, say, look, we've got regulations that we can enforce. It's wartime. This is the duty.
I was in the military 35 years ago, Tom, and I know all that. I've been through that myself, and I know how they can intimidate you. My hat is off to him. Hearing this upsets me. The whole war has kept me upset for 3 years now, and this gets my blood pressure going, and it deeply hurts me and aggravates me to hear that this guy who had his life on the line went over there, saw what mud and blood and guts looks like mixed up all together,
mm-hmm.
and comes home and speaks his mind and is now told he can't, you know, basically he's told quietly, you know, watch it, buddy.
Mm.
And we all know what the message is.
Dan, we've got it loud and clear. We appreciate your call. Kathy, I hear you there.
Yeah, I'm here. You know, the night after we finished editing the story and put it to bed at the magazine, I went out to dinner with friends, and at the end of dinner, burst into tears.
Why?
And I'm an old, hardened journalist. I've covered, you know, the war in Lebanon and other things. And I burst into tears because I knew good and well. I knew that, you know, he would get in trouble, that I thought Josh would get in trouble. I felt, you know, and I thought that the town would be mad at me for letting them speak their mind. I don't know. It just really upset me. And I'm not surprised by what's happened.
But Josh Chambliss, when I listen to you tonight, I don't hear that anger. Tell me if I'm wrong. It seems as though you're proud to say what you saw and to share what you think, even when it's not easy.
Yeah, I mean, as a police officer, you learn that there's two sides to every story. And, you know, I try to keep an open mind and see, you know, both sides of the each story. But we should always, mm-hmm. always, like I said earlier, mm-hmm. be able to hold our leaders accountable,
mm-hmm.
especially if your life's on the line.
Mm. And you know, and shared, you and your wife shared with Kathy, that war does come right home. She spoke with your wife, Farah, you know, who's also got her Paxil and Prozac going, or did, to stay on top of it. She said, you know, people said you're handling this well, and I'd say that's the purpose of the medicine, but I still worried I would have panic attacks at night, not in front of the kids. I'd go sit in the closet and cry. Josh, that's no fun.
Actually, Tom, that was Mayor Bunn's wife.
Oh, excuse me, that's Angela Bunn? I've got that wrong.
Angela,
I apologize.
Bunn, yeah.
I apologize.
Yeah,
oh, she was juggling, trying to keep the business going while Paul Bunn was in Iraq.
All right. Yeah. She would go sit at night in the closet because she didn't want to freak the kids out because they had four kids at home. So, and she was trying, and plus she had her own job as a substitute teacher. Mm. So you can imagine the stress.
I want to hear another voice from Arkansas right now. Judy Gray joins us. She's a 59-year-old retired teacher who volunteered to fill in for Dennis Mannon, the high school librarian in Bradford, after he was called up by the Air Force Reserve. Judy Gray, thanks very much for joining us tonight.
Yes.
Give us a sense of what it was like in school when so many men were off at war in Iraq. How were the kids taking it, the teacher, the school, Judy? Were they very aware of those who had gone?
Yes. Being as small as we were, where everyone knows everyone else, and then I was personally involved. My son-in-law was there. And these people who were there, over half of them I had taught, so they had been in my classroom.
Those men who were in Iraq?
Yes.
So you knew them awfully well?
Most of them I did, yes. Most of them.
And how did the school take on board where these men, these fathers and sons had gone, and how it related to little Bradford, Arkansas?
Well, it was kind of like I think one of the others said, you kind of are floating through it, and there would be days when we would talk, kids would ask. When I first went in, after I took over for Mr. Mannon, I immediately laminated a map, put it on the wall, and where the kids could see where they were. And when you draw a line on that map, on that world map,
mm-hmm.
from Arkansas to Iraq, it's just almost a straight line on
it's
the map.
Almost the same latitude there, I guess, as Baghdad, as Iraq.
And so it was though, you know, maybe that helped them see where they were, and that was, it was an eerie feeling.
And did it feel like, I don't know, like the town was on board with a national cause? Did that bring you some solace, or did it feel lonely?
Well, no, I think what I felt and what I heard was there was pride, and we were proud of our guys and supportive of our guys, and really heard very little complaining.
But you know what it must have been like for the wives of those men.
Oh, I do know. I mean, like I say, my daughter was one of them. And so that, I saw it on that respect because I tried to help with the children, keep them entertained, and help when I could to help ease some of her, you know, some of her loneliness and her bad times.
She must have, and you as well, must have really hung on the news out of Iraq.
Oh, yes. She, as a matter of fact, is a business technology teacher, and she had internet in her classroom, and she was on there daily.
Watching. And, of course, there were rough moments. We remember when that unit from Ohio, Josh Chambliss, in western Iraq, almost the whole unit died one day in an action. I mean, we saw what can happen to the National Guardsmen from a small town in big numbers.
Yes.
Josh, you were lucky in that sense to all come back alive.
Yeah, I mean, we were, and, you know, God blessed us by letting everybody come home in one piece. And, you know, a lot of prayers from our community went out, and I believe in prayer. I believe it works.
Judy Gray, thanks very much for being with us tonight.
Yes.
Let's take another call. Peter's calling from Lexington, Massachusetts. Hi, Peter, you're on the air.
Hello. Well, my son spent 9 months in Anbar province, and he's no fool. He observed the passing out of gigantic sums, essentially bribing the Iraqis, no control, no checking on the kind of work they performed. In some cases, perhaps they didn't perform much or shoddy work was done. And this colossal misallocation of resources, and by resources I mean, in the first place, men. In the second place, I mean the morale of the men, and the more intelligent the soldier and the less inclined he is to parrot the party line, the more likely he is to come home having seen what he saw and realize that we are infidels and we will be hated as infidels, and it is and the entire policy, not of the invasion, which was perfectly rational and perhaps a good thing because destroyed or interrupted major weapons projects, but this whole business of sticking around to make Iraq into something it cannot be, and instead of cleverly exploiting the natural fissures between Kurd and Arab and Sunni and Shia, American soldiers are supposed to stay and prevent them from fighting each other, when in fact these two fissures are, from the infidel point of view, greatly to be desired. Mm.
Peter, I want to pick all that up with Josh Chambliss, if I may, and thank you for your call. Josh, let me ask you, how do you put all this together? We've heard lots of voices of American soldiers in Iraq, and you can hear plenty of gung-ho there, saying, you know, we've got it, this has to be done, and we're in for the job. At the same time, we read and hear what you saw, some of your misgivings. How do you end up feeling about the mission that American troops are on there now?
Well, it's, you know, I'm not going to talk negative about it because we still have soldiers over there.
And I don't mean to undercut them. We're just trying to get the best sense you can share with us of what you honestly think.
But, you know, I just wish that they would, you know, go in there with a clear objective and quit trying to be so politically correct about the things that we say and do. You know, this is, you know, you can call it war, whatever you want to call it, but you cannot be politically correct when you're fighting in combat because that will cost American lives.
Did you see American soldiers, American officers ordering, I don't know, some kind of operations that you thought were not effective because of restraint or because of political correctness? Did that really, was that really a factor?
Well, it's yes and no. And I know that's kind of a bad answer to give.
No, it's all right.
But, you know, there was missions that, you know, that were to the T, that were executed correctly, and, you know, it helped the mission in the long run. Mm. But there's also, you know, from my standpoint, which, you know, I was in the part of where I helped execute the mission, mm-hmm. and if it weren't for guys of my rank, the mission wouldn't have been executed. But, you know, that were probably, I would say, you know, could have not really been done because it put lives in jeopardy that, you know, should have never been put there.
Let's get another call. Mark is calling from Boston. Hi, Mark. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hi, Tom. How are you?
Very well. Thanks.
My brother is serving with the 116th Idaho National Guard in Kirkuk, and mm-hmm. Our father is a Vietnam veteran. And my brother's over there right now. My father returned from Vietnam in 1967 and is still taking Wellbutrin and Depakote for post-traumatic stress from that war, and, you know, as a family, we witnessed firsthand post-traumatic stress in the home, and, you know, I just think that people rush to this war without realizing the long-term ramifications to people and, you know, what was going to happen on the ground, and that was my main comment.
We got it, Mark. There's simply no way to go to war without a whole trail of consequences, and thanks for that call. Kathy Booth Thomas, you spent some intense time with the people in Bradford. You came away. What's your conclusion about the lesson or lessons that this town of 819 is likely to take away from this war?
The lessons. Well, I think they were already a pretty close-knit community. But I think they were more trusting in the past. I don't know what to say. What I noticed is that, you know, the women told me that the men came home and they were hugging a lot more. But they're hugging not just their family's clothes, but their mm-hmm. fears. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a long haul for them. I was kind of shocked at because when I first met Mayor Bunn and the police chief, they struck me as very strong people. And for them to talk openly about post-traumatic stress and all of that and to, you know, admit that that was affecting them, it kind of shocked me, I have to admit, that you think of a soldier going off to war and it not, you know, that they become immune to it at a certain point, and they don't. They bring it home.
But there's a kind of strength in acknowledging it and talking about it as well. Chief Chambliss, you told Kathy that sometimes those jitters are there, even reaching a little more quickly for your gun than you'd like in the aftermath of your posting in Iraq.
Yes, I mean, you're always going to have, you know, bring home some of that tension with you. And, you know, as days go by, you know, that stress is starting to reduce. But, you know, when you get the pressure put back on, you can't help but get back in that frame of mind. I was just going to advise you, the mayor just come in, and, you know, he said that he would be willing to get on the phone at this time if you wanted to talk to him.
Well, in that case, we will change the order of events. We'll do it. Is Paul Bunn there now?
Yes, I'll have him pick up.
Well, thank you very much.
Hello, this is Paul Bunn.
Hi, Mayor Bunn. This is Tom Ashbrook with On Point in Boston. We're on the air, and I want to thank you for joining us.
Well, I really didn't know that I could join you, and I had walked in, and Josh had, the chief had told me, you know, that apparently that Mrs. Munn, Captain Munn, that would be, said that nobody had told me that I couldn't be, but I have evidence in my possession to, you know, change some people's minds on that, and I guess my attorney will be introducing it to another attorney of the military on Friday.
Wow, what an interesting up and down roller coaster of a day. Well, we're happy to have you with us. You clearly have the sense that it wasn't a good idea to talk only an hour ago.
Well, I'll be honest with you. The direct order that was given to me over a year ago was that the exact words mentioned were that you are ordered not to talk to the media anymore, that you are ordered to stand down and not to have contact with them, that this is a direct order, and to make sure that I fully understood that order.
And are you saying you got that order a year ago?
I actually didn't get it a year. I got it a year ago also, but it started probably in March of 2004.
But you've spoken with the media anyway, with Kathy Booth Thomas, who's with us tonight,
right?
And so, what's your position? How do you see things?
You know, I'm so confused. It looks like the National Guard or the Army would say, you know, this is a political person.
You're mayor, after all. You're an elected official. That's right. Yeah.
You know, and would help guide me. But I've had no one ever sit there with me and help me through any of this, because the bottom line is, I am a soldier in the United States Army, and I'm covered underneath the Code of Military Justice and can be prosecuted under the Uniform Code of Military Justice if I say something that somebody finds out to be wrong, you know. So I've always asked for, you know, put me where I need to be. Let me know what, you know, what my left is and what my right is. Mm. You know, in front of me and in back of me.
We're not looking to get you in trouble tonight. Let's talk about the priorities of your town. You're the mayor of Bradford, Arkansas. You need a new water system. How much is that going to cost the town?
$776,000.
And you've borrowed it, as I understand now.
Right. I had to borrow it all. I couldn't get grants.
But when you looked at that, the resources that would require compared to what you saw going to war, kind of a mismatch there.
Well, completely. First of all, let me say that I'm neither Republican or Democrat, but before I went to this war, I was 100% diehard Republican. And after coming back from war, I'm neither, because I've seen the devils of both sides of the parties. Mm. So right now I count myself as just a leader and a statesman. And I have seen the wastes of money that is just amazing. A little town like mine, forget my town, let's look at the state of Arkansas, what we could do with the money that has been wasted in Iraq. I believe 100% in the mission over there. I think that we should be there. I think that we need to be there kicking the insurgents' butts. I think that we need to have a glove-off kind of attitude.
But you could use that money, too. And Mayor Bunn, with that, we are flat out of time. Mayor Paul Bunn, we're grateful to you for being with us. Kathy Booth Thomas with Time Magazine. Chief Josh Chambliss in Bradford, Arkansas. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.